March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Takes off for third. There's Horner. Gathers it in. Over to first. Ball game. Cubs win. Presley finishes it off. And here in Arizona, the Cubs down the Diamondbacks 10-6.
That was on Marquee last night. John Bucciambi with the call of that Cubs 10-6 win over Arizona. Cubs are 1-2. Remember, they lost those games in Japan. Miguel Amaya, 5 RBIs, including a 3-run double in the fifth. Ian Happ, a 2-run double and a home run along the way. Justin Steele sort of struggled his way, pushed his way through 5 innings last night in this Cubs victory, again, by a final score of 10-6. Mark Grody and Rami Makhlouf with you here on the Score Midday Show. Rami, I don't know if I heard any your prognostication or your thoughts on the Cubs before this season started. How many wins, or about how many wins, did you think the Cubs would have, or do you think the Cubs will have this season?
High 80s. Okay. I know most of the projections I've seen 91, 92. I think that's a little lofty when you look at this lineup and this rotation. Out recently, the Athletic has been, they ranked all the opening day lineups, all the opening day starting rotations. I think the Cubs were 17th in opening day lineups and 21st in opening day rotations. I don't know how you put those two things together and come up with 91, 92 wins.
I agree, and you're right. A lot of people who pay a lot of attention to standings and baseball, and what's including Pakoda, which I know is a system, but it has the Cubs with 90 wins this year. I can't get there. This is what I said before the season, this is what I'm saying now at 1-2. I can't quite get to 90 wins with the Cubs yet this year. 86, 87. I think they're going to be better than 83 wins. Their total, exactly 83 and 79 the last 2 years. But if they had gotten Bregman, okay, if they had gotten an elite pitcher, like one or the other, I probably could have made it. Probably could have gotten the Cubs to 90 wins, but that part bugged me, and I know that I think Jed Hoyer did everything he could possibly do to get Bregman here or make a trade or sign an elite pitcher. I think he's a little bit held back on the finances or the money that he is, his allowance that he has in his wallet to be able to pay for some of these players. So based on that, I not yet. Cubs are good. Cubs are good. They're not beyond that. They're not a team that is built right now, I don't think, necessarily to win playoff series. But if they play well early, maybe you get to the trade deadline, and maybe then Jed Hoyer can do some actual damage.
Yeah, but a 7-8-9 game jump from really one major addition in Kyle Tucker. I know they added some arms to the bullpen and did some other things to sort of fill out the roster, but a 7-8-9 win jump for a baseball team, it's a tall order.
Yeah, I mean, and you're depending on things like, you know, I keep coming back to Miguel Amaya. You are depending on the regulars that exist to have bigger years or to sprout, as I keep saying, which is another way of saying developing. Miguel Amaya, maybe Pete Crow or Armstrong, maybe he gives you some more wins. And you mentioned he did a winning thing last night, getting to second base and not getting doubled up and leaving the door open for Miguel Amaya to get the hit. So yeah, you're going to be depending a lot on guys to do things like this. I do wonder too, like, and I know that you're not supposed to, like, Happ had one of those games, like the opening day game, the big 2-run double, a home run. He opened up a season. I think it was 2018. He first pitch, it was a home run. I do wonder if Ian Happ, man, because he's a good player. I wonder if he's ready to go to another.
Take that next step.
Yeah, because he, like, I mean, I've watched just about every game that this guy, I mean, I was on the Cubs circuit, when I was doing pre and post, when he came up, he looked like a guy who was going to be great. I mean, just that stroke and that swing and the playing ability. I don't know, man. I don't want to like put that in the back of my head based on this game, but it feels like it would be right about time for Ian Happ to have like a really big season.
I could be wrong. We were talking earlier about the Bulls, and I said it wouldn't be the first time that a 22-year-old in Josh Giddey is unlocked, or a 25-year-old in Coby White is unlocked. I look at guys like Ian Happ and Nico Horner and Dansby Swanson, Saya. They're sort of who they are in my eyes as far as the player that they are now. It's Kyle Tucker as well, and that's pretty good if you are what he is or has been throughout his career in Houston. If you're looking for guys with room for improvement between where they are now and their ceilings, I think it falls on PCA, Miguel Amaya, obviously Shaw at third base. Yeah. I think the rest of the lineup is kind of – they are what they are. They are who they are, and they're at their ceilings. And in my opinion, I could be wrong.
Right. And that's not bad. I mean, like, there's some good baseball, like Nico Horner. We saw him scalding the big. Good baseball player.
Yes, sir.
Hitting, making good contact last night. So that was good to see. Let's hear from Jed Hoyer on the topic of putting together a 90-win team. Now, this is yesterday. This is before the game. It's Jed Hoyer on the afternoon show of Spiegel and Holmes, which was in Vegas.
Unclear. I mean, I think there's projection systems that say yes. There's projection systems that say no. I mean, ultimately, I think the beauty of this game is, you know, we need to go out and every day as an organization, from front office to coaching staff to players, like, we need to try to exceed expectations and we need to optimize our performance. And that's really, to me, opening day is, it's the, you know, it's the first tee shot off the tee box. It's the, you know, it's the first game of the season, and it sort of signals that baseball is back. But ultimately for me, it's just, okay, this is the journey, and we need to, as a group, we need to outperform. And that goes really for everybody in the league, right? I think if we outperform, I think that we have a chance to be that 90-win team you're talking about, to you know, feel like we have a really deep, solid team. I think, but every team in baseball, I think, is looking to outperform and to get the best out of their guys, and you know, that's what starts today.
And the Cubs division is just so suspicious as well. And that was Jed Hoyer on the Spiegel and Holmes show yesterday. The boys in Vegas, they are still in Vegas. We'll go out to them at 2 o'clock today.
But with Carrot Top.
Yeah, Carrot Top, top of the hour, 2 o'clock. He will be live with the guys in Vegas. I'm looking forward to listening to that. Plus, you know, we get out of here a little bit earlier. You know?
Yes, sir.
Put the earbuds in and we can listen to what's going on. Does Jed Hoyer sound like a confident general manager to you right now, Rami?
He sounds very realistic. You know, and you know what I mean? That because it's real easy for a GM to come out and go, oh, yeah, we put together a great team. We could easily win 90 games. I'm real confident in this group of guys that we put together, and just give you GM speak. He's giving it to you straight, and he's telling you everything that's going to need to go right for the Chicago Cubs to reach that 90-win plateau that we're talking about right now. And the reality is, he's right. Everything that he's saying is true. I wish that wasn't the case. I wish he was just sort of padding the expectations and really believing that they are a 90-win club, but wanting his team to sort of outperform expectations in some way and get all the love that comes with that. But no, I think he's being very grounded, very realistic, and very honest when he says what he says. And while I say that and I respect that, I also hate that all that is true. I wish we weren't coming into this year like we have the last couple of years, and counting on guys to overperform or counting on guys to break out. You've brought up Alex Bregman a couple of times. That would have been great. That's a guy who comes with a certain level of performance where you go, if we get that, that's good. You got Kyle Tucker. That's a guy who performs at a level where you go, well, if we get that out of him, that's enough from that spot in the lineup. But asking every year, coming in and asking 3, 4, 5, 6 guys to outperform the back of their baseball card, to me, it's not a sound plan or
stressful way to live.
It's a very stressful way to live. And honestly, it's mid-market mentality.
Yeah.
That is not big market mentality. That's what they try to do in Cleveland, in Tampa Bay, in Milwaukee, is put together a group of guys where they go, we see maybe more in this guy than what that team got out of him. Let's bring him in and see if we can tap that, just tap more into that just a little bit and get a little bit more out of him. Dude, go and get players who you know who if they just live up to expectations, not beyond expectations, but who just live up to expectations, that you're going to be a good baseball team, and stop putting Cubs fans through this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, Jed Hoyer, I don't want to be too dramatic, but there has been this, because of the pressure, and like you, he sounds defeated a lot. Like,
a little bit.
Might be too strong of a word, or maybe just stressed. Maybe the word that we just used, that maybe Jed Hoyer is feeling it. Like, when you see him, he kind of looks the part. He's got that concern. He's almost like talking to us, like, guys, you understand? Like, this is what I have. These are the limitations, money wise, that I have. And I feel like I know I got to win this year. Cubs haven't been to the playoffs since 2020, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's 4 years in an era in which there is a different expectation for this team, a new expectation that began in 2015. There is a lot of pressure to get their way back into the playoffs this year. So I think Jed Hoyer, and I think it's good. I think it's good that Jed Hoyer is wearing that, because you want your GM to do things and do big things and feel that. And then you have Tom Ricketts, too, who he's had an interesting offseason, too, because he got a little bit testy at the Cubs convention when he was trying to implore people, look, don't pay attention to those organizations that are spending crazy money, like the Dodgers and the New York Mets and whomever else might be on that list. Pay attention to the Cubs and the system and the free agents and all of that kind of stuff. So Tom's angry, Jed Hoyer is looking stressed, and that's really a perfect place, I think, if you're a Cubs fan, to have this kind of stress coming together and feeling like you got, because Tom wants to prove his point that you don't need $1 billion to win, and Jed Hoyer wants to save his job. So it might be the perfect storm coming together for the Cubs.
Do you think it puts the pressure on them and almost forces their hand to win this year?
I do, and I think, and I don't know if I've heard, I'd have to go back. Maybe we've got the audio somewhere. But I think Tom Ricketts has said again this year or Jed Hoyer said on behalf of Tom Ricketts, that if they are winning at the deadline, that they could pour more resources into the Cubs. So as long as that exists and this pressure is still there and the Cubs are in the race, I mean, yeah, maybe that's where it gets real and they actually do something where you're like, okay, now I think the Cubs can sustain some sort of playoff run.
When you say, you know, Tom Ricketts' message of you don't need $1 billion to win, here's the thing. You got $1 billion, yeah. Dude. You got you're literally a billionaire, and the value of this franchise and everything that you've built around it there in Wrigleyville has, I don't know, quadrupled, octupled, whatever that is, since they bought the team, like the money is there. I know he talks about breaking even in terms of their year over year finances, but when you look at the value of the franchise and how much they've profited there when they eventually do sell this thing, I don't buy it when you cry poor or tell me that maybe you can't spend quite the way the Dodgers do or quite the way the Mets do. I understand that. Those are pretty unique situations, but there's no reason the Braves or the Phillies or some of the Boston Red Sox or some of these other markets should be able to outspend the Cubs. This isn't Tampa. This isn't Milwaukee. This isn't Cleveland. This is Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Tom Ricketts should just go around town just doing pickups, you know, the way gangsters do, just going to all his places. Go to Hotel Zachary. Hey, fill up the bucket. We got another player to pay. All right, now let's go to the rooftops. All right, what do you got for me? Where's my envelope? Take care of that. That's the money that was supposed to go to Bregman. That is, so you've got this whole thing starting to mesh with the Cubs, so I think that that could probably be good. And the Cubs know it. I mean, obviously they knew they were a third baseman short or a bat short in terms of what they were thinking. They didn't want to have to go with Shaw as the guy at third base. And who knows how it turns out. There could be more. I mean, it would probably be a bad thing if Justin Turner had more starts, because that would obviously suggest that Shaw didn't do well. But I don't know about him. I don't know about him if he's going to look good. What do you think of Shaw? Do you like him? Do you like the fact that he is up here and then you've got a developmental guy on a team that's supposed to win?
I do. I mean, you're going to have to develop some guys. I mean, the Yankees, as much money as they spend. The Dodgers, as much money as they spend. They have a developmental system, and they draft and develop their own players and bring them up to the major league level at some point. But if this is a win-now year, you're already counting on PCA to make a big jump in year two. You're already counting on Miguel Amaya to make a big jump in year two. To ask that from three guys, and one of them being a rookie, to be the three pieces that sort of extend your lineup and give you the ability to score runs 1 through 8, 1 through 9, that's a lot to ask from three young guys and one rookie. That's a little bit too much, in my opinion, for a team that is in win-now mode, which I think they are when you go out and trade for a Kyle Tucker who has 1 year left on his contract. I don't know about you, Grody, but I look at that and I go, well, if you don't re-sign him and you don't win a World Series this year, you lost that trade.
Yeah.
To me, that's the gamble you made with that. If you can't do one of those two things, re-sign him and have him in a Cubs uniform for an extended period of time and keeping you in contention and relevant for an extended period of time, or you don't win a World Series in the 1 year you have him, you lost that trade, especially with Cam Smith making the opening day roster at 22 years old after doing what he did in spring for the Astros. So it on one side, it looks like win now, you go and get a Kyle Tucker. On the other side, it's, well, we have a rookie at third base, and we're hoping that he can extend our lineup and give us a little extra punch.
God, and today's going to be interesting. You've got Jameson Taillon going today, and you talked about the pitching staff kind of being projections, have it middle of the pack or so. Look, Jameson Taillon, and I don't like saying, I'm speaking hesitantly now because he tends to be an every other year guy, but he's been good for about a year and change, about a year and a half or so. So if he, you know, let's see what he looks like today, let's see what he looks like early on. If he keeps going what he's had going, then you're in a good shape. I'm not worried about Justin Steele despite the two shaky starts coming out of the gate. You know, Shota looked good in Japan. I'm not expecting the magic that he had, the Fernando Valenzuela-like run that he had in the first half last year. But I think the point that I'm trying to make here is that it could be a pretty good pitching staff, but it still lacks that absolute dominating, you know you're going to win ace. Justin Steele is close, but he's not one of those guys yet.
And the thing that sort of sticks in my craw about that, Grody, is who's going to be on the mound for the Diamondbacks tonight? Corbin Burns.
Oh, is it Burns?
Yeah, who is a free
agent. Am I off a day here?
I thought it was Corbin Burns. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think you're wrong about that. I think Burns is not.
I thought they said it was going to go Gallen Burns for games one and two. Am I wrong?
Let's find that. But I think it was like a thing. Like, it's a story. I think Burns is not pitching against the Cubs in the series.
I stand corrected.
It is Merrill Kelly.
I stand corrected.
Yeah, No, it's weird. It should, like, I got to check this out, but it was a little bit weird that Zach Gallen was starting, but Gallen's been there. So actually, I get it. He's very good, obviously, Zach Gallen, who looks, by the way, like, do you know Josh Mooney? Is it? No, Kyle Mooney.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't he look like
a little bit? Yeah, yeah. A little bit. I didn't notice it until you said it, but yes. Yeah, a little bit.
Saturday Night Liver, though, he looks like him.
But point still stands, even though I was wrong about him being on the mound tonight. There's an ace. There's a stud in Corbin Burns.
Yes.
Who is a free agent, and the Diamondbacks in Phoenix. You know, they pony up the money to go and get that guy, and Chicago just sits it out. The Cubs just sit out the bidding for a Corbin Burns when that's exactly what you, and not to mention his former manager, the guy who sort of unlocked him at the major league level, and Craig Counsell, is your manager now. You have that relationship and a guy who knows how to use a Corbin Burns and get the most out of him. And they were just not in those discussions at all as he ends up in Arizona. Stuff like that does not make sense to me. If you can't get in on Juan Soto, you can't win the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes, okay. You can't get the Corbin Burnses of the world.
That guy would excite Wrigley Field.
The Alex Bregmans. You know what? These are the types of guys that you could have gone out and gotten this offseason.
Yep. You named two. I mean, Corbin Burns and Alex Bregman. No doubt about it. We'll talk more Cubs later on. Coming up next, though, we are going to bring in Anthony Herron. We are due to have him in studio, so we'll talk football and the Bears. I know he is already well studied on the draft, so we'll get into that with him and whatever else is on Anthony Herron's mind, because I know he's into the Cubs and the Sox and the Bulls as well. So it's all coming up on the Score Midday Show. Did I say the Blackhawks? Is there anything going on with the Blackhawks? I don't think there is.
No, I wouldn't know. Sorry, Grody.
It's Robbie Maclough. I'm Mark Grody. This is The Score.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
92 yards away from tying the game with 63 seconds and no timeouts. Stafford unloads, hit as he throws! Ball game! Brisker! Bears win!
Mark Grody, Rami Maclough on The Score Midday Show. I did this show. I don't know if you know about this show that I do here on The Score, at Rami. It's called On the Clock.
Oh, what's that?
It's an hour-long show. Yes. Thank you. It's an hour-long show that we typically do on Fridays that runs from 6 to 7, and it is about the draft, about leading up to the draft. We started doing this the first year the Bears had the number one overall pick, because that's neat, right? Because the Bears have the number one overall pick. You're on the clock. We decided to keep this what I call pop-up radio show going into another season. So thank you very much. I've made it to a third season of On the Clock.
Outstanding.
Thank you very much. It really is a career achievement in a lot of ways. So
longevity speaks to greatness,
it really does. We were talking about potentially fortifying the Bears secondary and talking about some safeties, just because you just don't know about Jaquan Brisker because of these concussions that he has been having, and we barely heard from him for about half the season because of a concussion that ended up dragging out the entire back half of the season for the Bears when we thought he was going to come back. So I said it, like, you have to be concerned. I think Jaquan Brisker's great. I think he is one of the few guys on the Bears defense that when opposing offenses look at him, I'm not saying they're necessarily game planning for Jaquan Brisker, but they know he lays the wood.
They have to account for him.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's what teams do. And he does, trust me, he does bring that kind of presence. But it was after that yesterday, the show a couple hours later, that Quani B, who that is Jaquan Brisker on Instagram, Quani B _, saw this. Credit to our guy Fishy Business. Kevin Fishbane was the one that grabbed the Instagram post from our guy, Jaquan Brisker. And here's what Quani B said, and I'm looking forward, Rami Maclough, to getting your reaction to this. By the way, Anthony Herron will be moseying in the studios here shortly as well. But this is Jaquan Brisker on Instagram. I promise to come back better than ever. Your unwavering support means everything to me in these challenging times. From the heart, I appreciate each and every one of my fans. Your prayers and your messages. And then there's a double prayer emoji. We didn't finish strong, and I say it's all my fault. I wish I could have fought alongside my team to win. That's my true passion and purpose. I will rise from this and come back and take what is mine. Year 4 will be special. It will be a testament to our strength and resilience. Until I return, remember, there are no comparisons. Rami, what'd you think of that?
It's a lot. It's like there's a lot of sentiments in there, and it's a lot to take in. But that last line, can you read the last line again real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. Until I return.
Until I return. I know he was cleared for football activities, but until I return, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, reading between the lines too much. That sounds to me like he's not quite ready to return yet to the football.
Until I return,
Did you read that?
No, I am now, though. I am now. I am in real time. I am reading into that right now.
And also to solely take the blame for what happened at the end.
Yeah, like it's part
season.
Culpability, part passive aggressive.
I feel bad for him. I feel bad for him that he thinks his injury was what tanked this season. I mean,
does he really mean that though?
I don't know.
It's his fault. Does he really think it was his fault? Like, what's going on here?
A lot in addition to Jaquan Brisker's injury went wrong for the Bears to lose 10 straight games last year. But
yeah,
that part of it just a little confusing.
Our culture is awesome.
The last part of it, until I return, that says to me, like, he's not quite ready to return yet. And I know we still have six months before any meaningful football is played, but those three words.
Yeah.
That rang a bell for me, and I was like, wait a minute. What does he mean, until he returns? Isn't he returning?
Right. I wish he would just say all that. Yes, I am Quanti B. I will be back.
Looking forward to it.
Love my
healthy
fans.
Healthy and ready to go. I would have just taken that. Last season was rough. I'm healthy and ready to go. Year four is going to be great.
Oh, we didn't.
Well, how about this? Yeah, yeah. Since we're reading into things.
Yeah.
Let's bring back Grody. You asked Kyler Gordon a few weeks ago when he got the, I'm blanking on the Ed Block Award.
Old Ed Block.
Yeah. You asked Kyler Gordon about this. So while we're reading into things, let's read into what Kyler Gordon said.
Have you talked to Brisker? Do you think he's going to be good to go, Jaquan Brisker?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah. It was just a short, easy response. Those are the things that I've been hearing in this offseason. And right there, obviously, that's right on the mic. So, yeah, I mean, I think it deserves some skepticism because of the injury.
Just concussions are such a tricky thing.
Yeah.
That even if a guy has been cleared for football activities, I don't know that necessarily means he's cleared for a full return to the football field. And so that was already in the back of my head. Like, what does that exactly mean when we heard that Jaquan Brisker is cleared for football activities? And then those three words, until I return, further made me go, wait a minute, is he back or can he just practice and non-contact? What exactly are we talking about with Jaquan Brisker and his readiness to return to the football field?
And it goes to a deeper question, something that I brought up a couple of times recently, that this Bears secondary, while it still feels good, it doesn't feel as locked in as it felt going into last season, where it just felt like the sky was the limit. And they had a pretty decent season, did the secondary. I mean, we saw some big-time development out of Kyler Gordon. We saw another good season out of Jalen Johnson this year. Where it gets a little bit tricky to me is Tyreek Stevenson. And not just because of, you could definitely add it into the equation, not just because of what happened in the Hail Mary play, but you and I were talking about it before the game. There are too many times where when you watch the tape, there is a big play by an offense, and who is in the picture way too many times? It is Tyreek Stevenson. He had a rough year last year. I think he's still a really good player. I just wouldn't be shocked if the Bears look even more. I mean, Terrell Smith has played a decent amount. Like, he's gotten on the field a decent amount the last 2 years, not more than Stevenson. But could there be more of a competition at that position this year? And then back to the safety spot, could the Bears, and I know that teams don't draft safeties high, could there be a safety drafted just to cover them?
Yeah, when it comes to Stevenson, we just saw the back of that number 29 jersey too much last year in some highlights.
Good way to put it.
And when it comes to Brisker, even if I am reading too much into those three words, until I return, and all of that is positive and he's ready to go, I'm hoping, praying, and wishing for the dude to stay healthy, just from a human being standpoint.
Amen.
Beyond a football standpoint. But I don't know that you can just stop yourself from being concussion prone. You know what I mean?
No, I know. That's the part. That's
it. And if he's going to change his style of play, which I think also lends itself to concussions, he's a physical player. He's throwing himself into the action a lot.
Yeah.
Is he as effective
right
when he's out there?
Yeah, so there's all sorts of questions when it comes. I mean, at this point, can you change the way a guy plays who has gotten to where he is, a second-round pick, a star in college, and a pretty good NFL safety? Can you change your ways at that point? I would think that would be a pretty tough trick. And I agree with you. I wish the best for him health-wise. That's it. Other than that, like, Jaquan Brisker, I hope they extend him and keep him if they could project that he's going to be healthy.
Right.
I don't personally. I wish the worst for him. That's just kind of how I roll.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Nothing but the worst for everyone. Matt named Anthony here. I wish the worst for you, Rami Makhlouf. I wish the worst for you, Mark Grody.
Yes, it's like, that Chappelle's show. That's the player in his club. I hope all the things, bad things in life happen to you,
and only you.
And only you.
Is this what happens when you come from the tower of television? You come in here and condescend to all the radio guys for the first few minutes?
Oh, no, that happens when I wake up in the morning. That's how that normally goes with me.
Wakes up, Peyton. Yeah. Wakes up, Peyton.
On the morning show that I do for Sirius. Actually, when Goff and I, Jason Goff and I, were working together at Sirius, he and our producer at the time came up with the Heron condescension alarm. Where it's like, anytime I corrected someone's grammar, anytime I spoke down to someone and, like, you know, corrected some facts or, you know, what, sometimes fiction I correct as well.
God, who the hell cares?
Yeah, they would go ahead and sound the Heron condescension alarm. So, yeah, that's just me. It's a day that ends in Y.
That's awesome. Anthony Heron, the condescending one, as we call him around here, is in the studio on the Score. Mark Grody, Rami Makhlouf, this is the Score Midday Show. So are you coming from Fox? Is that where you're all dressed up? You look good?
From the Big Ten Network.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a show to do over there, and the opportunity was presented to I guess discuss things with you two fine individuals. I said, you know what, I'm not too far away. I think I can get over there in person by the time I finish up. So as opposed to getting on the phone, I figured I'd come get some FaceTime.
Individuals.
A couple fine individuals.
After all the hate.
But I also feel like he's trying to say he's doing us a favor right now.
Did you get that? Yeah, he is.
You know what I thought? What the hell? Maybe I will go in studio with those guys.
There's worse things I could do with my time. We're leaving on a jet plane tomorrow. It's my last time to spend some FaceTime. I made like a tearful goodbye. When was I on? I was on last night, I'm pretty sure. It was either last night, night before last. You weren't on last night, right?
I was not.
I was on last night.
Two nights ago. Whatever the last time I did the evening shift, I did like a tearful goodbye thing. I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks. You guys won't hear me on the station. We're going on vacation, blah, blah, blah. And now here I am.
Well, yep. Jump in, man. We're in mid-Bears conversation. Yeah. You can definitely add some texture to this because we were just talking about the Bears secondary and Jaquan Brisker. And, you know, he just put out like an Instagram post.
Speaking of tearful messages.
Yeah, you saw that. You saw that. So, I mean, I really hope, you know, we're saying hope the guy is healthy and he can still perform at the NFL level. But your thoughts on Brisker and just in the thoughts, too, about Tyrique Stevenson in the secondary. Like, is it crazy for me to think that the Bears might be looking at more Terrell Smith this year than they did last year?
I believe it would have to be – well, I'll start with Jaquan Brisker. Brisker is one of the growing members of the Bears' defense, but there was still a lot of meat on the bone for Jaquan Brisker to continue to improve and expand his game as well. The highs of the physicality that I heard you guys talking about when I was driving over, there is no doubt about that. Once he was gone, you know, Jaquan Brisker, Andrew Billings, those are two guys who both on the back end and then up front, when you think about – a mentality that seemed to be missing from the Bears defense over the last couple of months of the season, really. Jaquan Brisker is one of those guys who plays with that attitude, you know, who's in full football mode when he's out there, just trying to maim the opponent at every given opportunity. And you benefit from that as a defense. So no Billings, no Brisker. That showed up, you know, not just in the pure execution, but just in the mentality you want that defense to operate with, where they're trying to impose their will on opponents. So no Brisker, that showed up a lot in that manner. But as far as his route recognition, his diagnosis of things going on in the backfield with motions and everything, there's still a lot of ground for Jaquan Brisker to cover in that regard. So I was looking forward to watching that continued development last season, development opportunities that weren't there for him and weren't there for us to continue to watch and evaluate, for the Bears to watch and evaluate in the way that they could with other members of the secondary. For Tyrique Stevenson in year two, that evaluation took a dip. But, you know, for Kyler Gordon, that evaluation ascended. There's young DBs out there, where Jalen Johnson is amongst the best in the business. There's a number of other young DBs who, all right, they're about to enter this next stage of their career where you're wondering, what will it mean? Is it a next contract with the Bears? If so, what are the finances that would be associated with that? So Brisker was not yet a proven commodity, but there's a lot of ability that's there and what he brings to things. You would hope, to your point, Rami, that when he comes back, there will be the comfort and the freedom to play with that same sort of vicious attitude that he does, because that's what can separate him from so many other guys on the back end.
Will you give me attitude if I ask you to stick around through the break?
Ray already gave me attitude, we're good. I've been told. You're in it. We're in for the long haul.
We'll take two segments from you, Anthony Herron. So Anthony Herron is here. We will talk more Bears coming up, including the draft. I know that Anthony has been working on that, doing some studying. I've done my fair share as well. So we'll talk about that.
What's up with the mocks? You'd have had like 5 mocks out by now usually, hadn't you?
Well, you know, nobody has said, hey, Grody, where's your mock? So I don't know. We'll see.
I just said it. Does that matter?
Yeah, where are your mocks, Grody?
You're making me work here. Are you mocking me? it's not even April yet. It's not even April.
That's a fair point.
I will tell you, though, who I did mock on in this time slot on the Score Midday Show the other day with Layla and Marshall. I'll tell you that.
Okay.
I did it verbally, so maybe that's all I'm required to do for the season.
All right.
So
I can work with that.
I'll share that. We'll talk more Bears. We'll see if Big Ant wants to talk about any of the other ongoings of our city sports, because the Cubs and Sox and Bulls all
doing
win.
Stuff.
It was a
so
night.
If you need an opportunity, because we all need a microphone.
To share in some positivity.
On a day like today. That's right. We love positivity here. Don't let anybody tell you differently. It's the Score Midday Show on the Score.
Ants! Big Ant, your guy.
The condescending voice of blackness.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
Welcome back. It's me, Mark Grody, along with Rami Makhlouf, and Anthony Herron is in studio with us. Before we went to the break, I told you that I would tell you who I decided to, when forced to, make a pick for the Bears at 10 the other day with Layla and Marshall. I said at number 10, the Chicago Bears take Penn State tight end Tyler Warren. That is correct. 104 catches, 1,233 yards, 8 touchdowns, also 218 rushing yards. They use them all over the place. A 12-point average on those catches. Anthony Herron, let's go to you. What do you think about that pick for the Chicago Bears?
I feel like that's kind of a condescending question.
We settled them down during the break.
Yeah, coming from that guy, that really means something. So I'm trying to remember if it was before the draft or maybe it was just after the draft last year when you and I were talking at some point, Groats, about the Bears taking a receiver, or I don't know if you maybe mocked Roma Dunze.
I mocked
point.
Brock Bowers last year.
Okay.
Yeah, really?
I did.
That would have been a nice pick for the Bears. Certainly would have been an additional playmaker on offense. And
Brody likes tight ends, see? Yeah.
Well, that's what I hear. And the way that...
Go get him, baby.
The way that the Bears were structured last season...
But
the way
on.
The Bears were structured last season, I used the term gluttonous.
Yes, you did. I love that.
In reacting to that idea of them taking
that.
Like a skill position guy for where they were on each line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
I didn't love that in the top 10. We knew they were going QB at number one overall.
Yeah.
It just felt to me like they could have bolstered the line of scrimmage with the next pick. I don't feel the same this year because of what they've done in free agency. You know, like they shouldn't be done, but they've at least bolstered the interior of the offensive line. They've got on into free agency, gotten a quality defensive tackle, a quality defensive end. So they have bolstered both lines of scrimmage in a way where if they go still at number 10, I wouldn't be angry at it. I loved Roma Dunze as a prospect, but I didn't love where the Bears roster was at to go Roma Dunze at 10 last year. It wouldn't feel as gluttonous to me now because they have done some of the work on both lines of scrimmage where now you say, you know what, you're not as needy on the O-line and D-line as they once were.
Which is what you want to do in free agency in the offseason, right? Before the draft, you want to sort of give yourself that freedom of taking the best player on the board and not having a glaring need or a glaring hole on your roster.
Right, and that's the goal. I think it's been well executed now. You know, we felt like things were executed fairly well last offseason, too. We know what went on during the regular season, but... For now, it's certainly a better roster, but it is a roster in the deepest division of football. So that combination of how the Bears have handled free agency so far, at least now you've got proven commodities that they've added here. They have not developed as well as you would like a team to develop to get sustainability, to take the North and never give it back. They're not in that position because they've missed on draft picks, and missed is probably an overused term, but they haven't developed their draft picks adequately enough to turn themselves into a deep roster. So as much as they've done so far in free agency, it's still not a deep O-line. It's still not a deep D-line, right, because you got two young defensive tackles who, the reason you go out and get Grady Jarrett partially is because you hope he helps to bolster what they're going to do from a production standpoint. So there's still a lot that needs to go better for the Bears than what it did last year, but the roster feels like it's in a better place.
I got something for you guys. Now, you're going with Tyler Warren. And now, is that the guy, is that your dream pick, or is that just who you think will be the best available pick player at 10?
I mean, I think there's a little bit of both. I mean, like Anthony was just saying, it's not ridiculous to, like, before the draft, I probably wasn't saying that, but now it's not ridiculous to think about a skilled position player. It's not gluttonous, as Anthony
said. And there are a lot of things that, if you asked a few weeks ago, or a lot of guys who you asked a few weeks ago, they maybe wouldn't be on the Bears board or wouldn't be at 10, but the longer you go in draft season, you hear about guys slipping. So I put together some groups of three guys that may slip to the Bears and want you to pick one of them. But before I get to that, just one player.
You about to make a public service announcement?
No, just one player.
At first.
Now, I haven't seen him slip to the Bears in the mock draft yet, but Abdul Carter went from being the best player in this draft to now with two injuries. He's not going to work out at his pro day. The measurements are a little different than what people thought they were. I've seen him at 5 or 6. If Abdul Carter slips to 10, do the Bears have to take him no matter who else is on there?
Yes. I mean, for that value at number 10, yes.
Okay.
And I won't go too long on this, but because I watched Tyler Warren really closely, watched Abdul Carter really closely, Abdul Carter is, I view him in a similar vein to I viewed Saquon Barkley when he came out.
Gotcha.
Just an absolute monster of a physical specimen who snap in, snap out. You're not going to get the level of elite production each individual snap that you would hope for his God-given abilities. But the splash play will always be available at Abdul Carter.
I'm with him.
Okay. So, yeah. Out of these three guys, all three of these guys slipped to the Bears at 10. Which one do you take? Campbell, Graham, and Jenty.
Campbell.
Oh man,
Campbell.
You go Campbell.
Yes.
All right. God, this is tough for me right now between Jenty and Graham.
You know what, Graham?
God. Yeah.
Because I'm seeing some drafts where he's now slipping to 10,
right,
kind of like Abdul Carter, where before it was like.
Yeah, I'm with you. I still can't do it. I still can't. If given the choice, I still can't take a running back at 10. No. I still can't take Ashton Jeanty there. I wouldn't go nuts if they did. I wouldn't lose it or anything. It would be fine. I'd find a way to like it. But Mason Graham, yes.
Membu, Jeanty, and Tyler Warren slip to the Bears at 10. Which one are you taking?
Tyler Warren.
Yeah,
Tyler
Warren. Both of you going Tyler Warren?
Obviously. Yeah.
Graham, Membu, and Warren slip to the Bears at 10.
Well,
which way are you going?
Don't I have to stick with Tyler Warren?
I
can't dig my way out of this.
That's why I asked if you just thought he would slip to them at 10, or if that was like your dream scenario.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, I tend to think...
Because it makes it moot if he's your dream scenario.
No, that's a great point, and I tend to think he won't be there at 10, just from the mock drafts. And I know that mocks can be wrong, but it sure feels like this guy is like legit and can change an offense. So
when I did my fave five possibilities for the Bears around 10, like maybe they trade up a little bit, trade down a little bit, but you know, if they're in that range, I had Mason Graham in the top spot for me, just, and if he does slip a little bit and the Bears say, oh, he's outside the top five, let's trade up a couple of slots and make sure we get a guy. Mason Graham to me has the cleanest film of any of the top prospects in the draft. Now, would you like him to be a little bit heavier? Would you like him to be a little bit taller? Perhaps. But as far as just having enough, as far as the physical traits, height, weight, speed, athleticism, power, his fundamentals at the position as a run defender and a pass rusher are off the charts. He's just a playmaker. Like, you just look at the film, he's good at everything. He can potentially become an elite interior defensive lineman in the NFL. Some of the other guys are just kind of trait-based when you're thinking about them as top five picks.
And how good that would look with Grady Jarrett, with Andrew Billings, guy that you mentioned earlier, and then all of a sudden Jervon Dexter looks better. Maybe you're still getting something out of Zach Pickens, and that obviously helps the guys on the outside too, come with Odangbo, and we'll see what they get out of Montez Sweat. Unfortunately, our time has come to an end with Anthony Heron, who got... Yeah, it is sad. I'm feeling... You know, we've come a long way since the condescending first few moments of it. I feel like we've come full circle.
You guys are real sarcastic and condescending.
For real though, Anthony, thanks for coming in studio with us, man. Always, it's always good to see you, man.
You guys know I'm always available unless I'm doing something.
Anthony Heron doing Dave Wanstead with a New York accent. I loved it. That was so good. This is the Score Midday Show. Mark Grody and Rami Makhlouf. Jim DeShays from the Cubs broadcast booth is next, talking about a Cubs win on the Score.